Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Dr. Gary Penn, and welcome to my podcast. I am I'm a little giddy right now. I am I'm just all happy. Why am I all happy? Well, I can't tell you exactly why I'm all happy, but I am all happy, and I am going to be interviewing, or I am interviewing today, Kimberly Seltzer. And she is a makeover and confidence expert. Whatever that means is she's going to tell you, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about it. She's also a fellow therapist, and she's a dating coach. And if you're in my field, by the way, why do you come to therapy? I mean, if you think about it, why does anyone come to therapy? Well, I hate my wife, I hate my husband, I hate my job, I hate my mother, I hate my father, all, you know, the headlines. And of course, I just can't find somebody to love, someone to make me happy, someone to connect with. And Kim utilizes therapy, in-field date coaching, which we're going to talk about, NLP, she'll tell us what that is, and styling, which helps people with their confidence, and she helps women update and discover their image, and she does wardrobe consultation. She assists in purchasing clothes. I mean, who doesn't need that? How many times have you seen that's a fashion don't, and you just kind of want, you know what always, well, I don't want to get into this. I'll talk about this with Kim. But anyway, she's a player. She travels, she's a co-host and lead expert, a co-host and lead love expert of a dating show, The Great Love Debate. She co-hosts a radio show. She has a new cable dating show. She's been everywhere in Cosmo and Fox Magazine. And truth be told, we are, and we'll talk about this as well, we will be doing a workshop on dating and relationships in April that I am all excited about. So, Kim, you've been waiting to hear me talk about you, and hello and welcome to my podcast.
It's so odd hearing somebody talk about you and just staying silent. I just have to say that. But thank you for the intro.
Thank you for the intro and saying the things that you wrote to me about, which,
right,
of course, are all true, but it's so funny. But yes, you are welcome, and it's my pleasure. And so, how fun. And tell me about yourself. Tell me, I know we met, of course, many times, and you were a therapist in Chicago. Is that right? Do I have that right?
I was. Well, you know, just to back up, I mean, that's why I guess I was chuckling when you were reading my bio, because, I mean, I feel really grateful that I'm doing all these things and helping people in different ways. But really why I'm so passionate about doing what I'm doing is because of my own personal journey. And so, you know, like sometimes what thrusts us into what we are passionate about is something that we've struggled with in our prior lives. And that certainly was the case with me. So, yes, I was a therapist, in answer to your question, but now I kind of consider myself a retired therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that I don't still use that in my practice, but, you know, I enjoyed it. I worked in many kind of different venues, you know, in the hospitals and private practice and schools. And at the time, I really thought I was helping people, and I'm sure I did. But now, looking back, having my own journey of getting a divorce and struggling with going out and trying to date and raise kids and all these things that I've gone through, and then my own transformation personally, I now see how much more I can help people. And
mm-hmm,
these days,
mm-hmm,
you know, these days it seems to me, and definitely given what I do, whether I'm shopping with somebody or I'm out at a bar with somebody and helping them with their body language and flirting techniques, it's about action. Because one of the things, and Gary, you and I could probably talk to the cows come home about this, but as a therapist, is that people would come and talk, and talking's great. Look, we're talking right now, but very few people knew how to take action towards the change. It's like, yeah, I know my stuff, I know my issues, but now what? So I kind of consider myself the now what right now. And, like, I don't know if anyone has seen What Not to Wear and Hitch, like those two, the movie and the TV shows combined.
Yeah.
That's kind of me. That's what I am. So,
right. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I tell people all the time, like, a lot of the things that I tell them, the guy at 7-Eleven could tell you. You, like, if you're 400 pounds, you don't need Dr. Gary Penn to say, well, you know, back away from the pizza. You know, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right. It's like, God, Gary, really? Like, I should? I never knew that.
Yeah,
like,
you
that's
know
amazing.
That.
You are just the most amazing, insightful therapist ever. And that's, you know, it's the idea of, or when people say, I have to go to the gym instead of I'm going to go to the gym. It is about action, isn't it? It's about, but it's, you know, it sounds so easy. And what I find, what I love about therapy is, of course it's easy, but why is it so difficult then? And that's what I find so vexing. But you would be the wonderful transitional object that will hold my hand if I'm terrified of meeting somebody to say, Gary, it's not so dangerous. Let me give you a helping hand up here.
Yeah. You know, and actually, it's really true. It's almost like an assembly line, you know, and people who come to me have been going to therapy, which I love because they're doing all this good work, but they're ready for something else. And people will tell me about their issues and challenges, and my answer is, don't tell me, show me. And let's just go do it, you know. And no one can really see themselves. So a lot of people don't know that there's some really cool, easy things that you can do, shifting the way that you go about things, whether it's your body language, your messaging, your tonality, the way you walk, the way you're presenting yourself, that can really shift the way people perceive you and then change, in essence, how you feel about yourself.
So it's the behavior first and then the shift within my psychology, as opposed to the shift in my psychology and then the behavior.
Kind of, yeah. I think that's a good way of recapping. And again, everybody has its, you know, kind of their own journey with that. And I will say that unlike some other, you know, coaching tools, like, I'm not a cookie cutter approach girl. I think because I used to be a therapist, I feel that everybody is an individual and has their own story that has shaped them. I always say our past is connected to the future and the choices we make and the patterns we create. So it's like I still look at that, people's stories, and how that's connected to them right now. How is it showing up right now? So if you had a traumatic experience when you were, you know, before age 7, usually we see this, and then it's showing up in adulthood a certain way, even from the minute you say hello to somebody, that's where the magic happens. It's like, okay, well, we know this, but now what can you do to just change it and just feel the difference of what that's like? So
if I'm, you know, a woman, when I was young, let's just say there was some sexual trauma or some shame about my body or something along those lines. And here I am, let's say in my 30s or 40s, and I'm keeping myself in shape and so forth, but I wear like clothes that hide my body, right?
Mm-hmm.
That are just very whatever. I don't want people to see my breast or notice that I have breasts or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Is it that the idea that you have is let's just wear these things and see how that feels, and then that will change your perception because you will wear them as a woman, not as a little helpless girl.
Yeah, that's a really cool way of saying it. You know, it's interesting. I once worked with a woman. I gave a workshop a couple of years back, and afterwards we went to the bars and we kind of practiced in time some of the stuff that I was teaching. And this woman was really put together, and her issue wasn't really the way she was dressed, but it was her body language and her the energy she was giving off. And, you know, as I was watching her in the room, I said to her, what happened? And she said, what do you mean? And actually, she was a therapist too. And I said, you're protecting yourself in some way, and I'm not sure what that's about, but it's showing up, and I can see that guys are confused about it. And she just burst out into tears. And it turns out that, like you said, she had been sexually abused, and she was wearing this coat of armor. And it was on so thick that a guy couldn't dent it. But it was on a subconscious level. She didn't know it was showing up in her body. So it's not just the clothes, but it could be the way, like, that she would maybe present herself. Even the way she would talk to a guy was very guarded. And, you know, like, there was a sense of her not being able to be vulnerable and real. And so she had this facade of, I'm perfect, I'm okay, but she really wasn't. And I got to know, and that was all, like, we just had a little bit, like, it was literally a 10-minute interaction, and I got a note from her, like, a day later, she's like, Kim, you completely changed my life with that one thing. Because she had no awareness of it, and that's the thing. Yeah, that's the stuff that's cool.
That is the stuff that's cool. Freud used to, when he was, obviously, years ago, but when he made a correct interpretation, or at least what he thought was a correct interpretation, he'd have a victory cigar with his patient, because it was so. I mean, talk about symbols and so forth.
Talk about phallic. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes, but it was so wonderful, you know. And what Freud said as well when he talked about interpretations. Is, and you didn't necessarily make an interpretation, but you made an interpretation that something was wrong. But he said, you know that an interpretation is correct when it brings a sense of relief to the patient. That the patient could actually exhale. And I think what you saw with this woman is that she's been holding this in her entire life.
Yeah.
And you hit on something, and all of a sudden, it just, what a sense of relief that she couldn't hold back her tears, that they came running forward. And these things are life-changing, aren't they? I mean, it's one of the things, obviously you and I work differently, but in tandem, I mean, I'm a therapist, I was trained analytically, I love, but I also work behavior modification. I mean, every therapist, I don't care if they're Freud's son or grandson, they all work behaviorally, because that's where the meat, and that's where it is. You have to take action. But we want to understand things, and it's so important. As far as, you know, when someone's talking to me in session and they have their hand over their mouth, it's the same thing. Like, what are you, like, you're trying not to tell me something by telling, you know, it's, you see it all the time, and it must be such a treat for you to be there. And for you to, you know, there's that old Buddha saying, you can't see your own eyebrows. Well, you could see your client's eyebrows.
Oh, my God. I love that. I always say, you can't see what you can't see, so that's my job, is to help you see. And that's exactly right. I love that you have that kind of integrative approach as well. And when I was a therapist, I had the same kind of theoretical orientation, and even started doing drama therapy. And I just felt like there was so many modalities that weren't utilized, and that happened to different people for different reasons. So I really, and when I go out in the field with people and I do like the full makeover inside out, I really am incorporating all these kind of different modalities, if you will, to help people move forward. It's almost like a puzzle, you know, putting the pieces together to make someone whole. And it's like, oh, okay, here's where this piece is missing. Let's kind of plug that in. There was another story. This was fascinating, too, along these lines. There was a guy I was working with, and he just has a lot of self-esteem issues. And, you know, as we worked together, and actually he was a therapist, too. I work with a lot of therapists. We can talk more about that
all
later.
All these broken therapists.
That's another show, by the way. every time we would talk to a pretty woman, he would take his right arm and put it across his body to the left and hold it. I don't know if you can picture that.
I'm doing it right now.
It's one of those like kind of insecure poses.
Yes.
He had no awareness that he was doing it. And it was only when it was a woman that he found attractive. So I said to him, I said, Doug, do you realize that you keep doing this? And I modeled for him what he was doing. And he said, oh, my God, Kim, I had no awareness. Now, again, he's a therapist. He's pretty savvy. And when he dug deeper and as we explored together, he figured out that he had a very, like, overbearing and over-controlling mom. And when he was reprimanded and when he felt insecure, he would do that. That was his position as a child. And he connected that in his body to how it was showing up. So a pretty woman in his mind just felt overwhelming, like it was the sense of insecurity for him.
So he had to hold himself almost.
He had to hold himself, yeah.
Interesting.
Go ahead. Oh, no, I was going to say, but what was cool about it is that it was a very easy shift. And once he, like, didn't do it anymore, it was really, really effective seeing how he was able to then talk to these women.
Right.
And it was such a small shift.
That's right. Well, one is a constrictive position. And if you take it away, it's an expansive position. And I firmly believe in my work and when I work with my patients is let's move to expansion. But I want you to be my therapist for a minute, okay? So when I was
how long do we have?
This is the Broken Therapist Club.
Right.
So I realized, like, when I was, I guess, in my 20s, probably my even mid or late 20s, it was interesting that when I was watching a movie and there was a kissing scene, I would always look away. And it was so fascinating. So I had one of those moments, you know, Freud talks about the observing ego, where you could actually see yourself, be yourself. And I was watching this movie, and there was this passionate kiss, and it's now that I'm thinking about it, I would look to the left and down. And I realized that when I saw myself do that, I said to myself, I always do that. Always. No, I know why I do that. I know why I do that, because I grew up in a home where sex was, you know, wrong and bad and all these things. And but it's funny because I thought of myself when I realized it as kind of self-aware and, you know, working on myself and taking the journey. But there was like, there's like these landmines, these emotional, I call them IEDs, improvised emotional devices that you step on and you don't even realize that they're there because they're so incredibly subtle. Like if you were watching me watch television, you would say, Gary, why did you avert your eyes? And like if I was in a bar or something and I couldn't make eye contact with a woman, you would be able to say that to me.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That's interesting. There's, as you were describing it, there was this overwhelming sense of shame, you know, the feeling of shame kind of.
Yes.
You know, got brought up for me, for you. And so then immediately when you said about your household, so the feelings that get elicited on top of the kind of behavior that we're noticing is also interesting. And I find, I definitely am going to write an article about this because it seems like all my clients lately, both men and women, I have this overwhelming kind of almost difficulty expressing feelings or even finding words to knowing how they're feeling. And a lot of times that in itself is hindering them from making meaningful connections because part of connections is being vulnerable and talking about how you're feeling.
It's so right.
So many people are focused on the other person, and the over caretakers is kind of the syndrome that I've been calling it lately. And I think that's why I'm seeing so many therapists in my practice is that it's they're over caring and too interested in the other person and not enough sharing of themselves and allowing themselves to feel and be vulnerable that connections are being lost or they attract the narcissist. So it's like it's really interesting just kind of the dynamic that's happening. And I think technology, too, is playing a part of it.
It's technology. It's technology is we should get into that, and we will get into that. But let me just say with what you're saying is I was talking to a patient today, and he was telling me, you know, he's very much in love with this woman, and but he was having these kind of things that he was feeling, these things about whatever, anxiety or depression, and what his pattern is to think them to himself, and that often what that does is that isolates him from his partner. And I said, you know, what you do to get close is not to have these feelings, is but to be able to bring them into the relationship in a healthy way and be loved for who you are, not just for what you want the other person to see.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Right.
So true. So true.
Because I don't want to have to wear a toupee for you to think I'm handsome.
Right. But if you wear a toupee where you feel that you're handsome, therefore other people will. I mean, and that's really the difference. Right, it's not doing things for other people, but doing it for yourself, so that you are being reinforced. But for yourself, and there's a huge distinction there, because a lot of times, like, people kind of question, you know, the whole image part of it, which is just huge. I don't think enough people talk about it, and it really makes or breaks the first impression and the kind of message of who you are in the world. And when you show up in a way that's a version of your best self, then you are actually advertising a congruent self, you know, if that makes sense. So that and we know this, and I think this is what you're alluding to, is that people are attracted to people who like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
go
magic.
Ahead. But,
yeah.
Okay, here's my question to you, though. A lot of people, like a lot of the people that I see, a lot of people that I know, they're a work in progress, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, if I don't like myself, like, let's say I don't hate myself, but let's say I'm one of those people that are just, you know, I've been blessed a few times. I'm hurt. I don't have the greatest job. I'm not tall enough, or I'm too fat, or like whatever, you know, whatever things that we carry with us as we go through life and we try to meet people. And can I still connect with somebody? Can I find a part of me, a part of myself that is connecting, even though I don't really like myself all that much?
Yeah, it's so. And actually, I would say so many of my clients kind of come to me with what you just said. It's a very common thing, you know. And obviously, that's tied into confidence and self-worth and self-esteem. And you know, my thing is it's overwhelming, you know, just to think of all the things that you don't like about yourself and that you want to change. So where I start is what people do like about themselves. Like, let's just start small. And, you know, because I think so much of the heaviness in therapy is focusing on what's not working. And I like to really hone in on the positive and say, okay, we get that, but what is working? And then let's hone in on that. You know, it's like a confidence thing. I challenge people all the time. They're like, oh, well, I'm not confident. That's not true, because there is an area, and I don't care, I can take anybody's life that they do feel confident in.
Sure.
So what is it about that area in their life that they're confident in? And can that be somewhat translated to other areas? Usually we're confident in things that we know. So the things that we don't know or we don't have experience in, we're not going to be as confident. So, you know, it's kind of like starting there. And I do a strength-based exercise with people, having them write down different things that they like about themselves in different areas of their life. And it's really, really powerful for them. And what's even more interesting is seeing where they're getting stuck. So, you know, if one category is the physical piece, like, you know, look in the mirror and say all the things you like about yourself physically. If that's an easy area, and then I ask them, well, what do you like about yourself like as a person, you know, the almost kind of personality, and they can't come up with anything, that's where the conversation is, right? So, but at least mm-hmm. there's an area where they do feel good in. So it is true, and I think that none of us, you know, feel 100% awesome about ourselves. I mean, we all have that, you know.
Sure.
Getting to that place.
What do you do when you have someone, let's say, who, you know, I'm sure you have people who are like the rest of us, flawed to the degree that we're flawed. Someone's not tall enough, or someone's too tall,
yeah.
or someone's overweight, or like what, like how is that a challenge and how is that a success for you when you work with your clients?
You know, it's interesting. I like talking in stories. I hope you don't mind, but that's how.
No,
I
like listening in stories. That's good.
Oh, good, because that's one of the things I teach people. It's so much more interesting talking in stories than a Q&A session. But that's a whole different topic. The thing is that there was this. So in body image, that issue shows up almost in every one of my clients. Even if somebody has a really great body from an outside perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I always find that everybody still has that kind of issue. And, again, it stems from maybe things that childhood, maybe a woman, like, developed early, you know, and she was made fun of. Mm-hmm. Or I can say, I'll be vulnerable right now. Like, what's funny to me is that I look back in my childhood, and I have really long legs. And my legs grew before my body. So you can only imagine, like, I was that gawky girl. That,
mm-hmm.
And so I got called Daddy Long Legs. So for the longest time, I had a complex about my legs, and I always wished that they were shorter. Now,
mm-hmm.
fast forward, I've learned to love my legs, and because I've loved my legs, I showcase them, and I get reinforced for them. So it's like there's a lot of shifting that happened throughout the years in my development. But going back to the story relating to your question is there's a woman who was overweight, and I mean, shopping was painful for her. I have a lot of, you know, ladies will come to me maybe who are over size 14, and they just feel like there's no clothes for them, and they don't look good in clothes. It's horrifying for them to walk in a store. And in this particular case, she was wearing clothes that were way too big for her. So she was actually appearing bigger than she was. But when she looked in the mirror, she couldn't see it. So this is where I talk about the magic and the power of the action of shopping. I told her, let's just go through the store and pretend like we're trying on costumes. Like, we're just having fun. Like, let's forget about, like, whether or not you're going to buy anything, let go of the result. Let's just have fun and see what brands are fitting you. That's another thing I teach people about, what brands fit you as well, which is uber important for each body type. So anyway, I pulled out a pair of tight black pants. And she looked at me, and she almost, like, slapped me. And she's like, Kim, I cannot wear that. I'm like, I think you can. And I actually think it'll make your legs look amazing, and you will actually look taller, because she was on the shorter side. So she's like, oh, God. I'm like, you hired me to help you, so let me help you. So we gathered all her stuff, and I let her pick out her bigger clothes, too, just so she could see the contrast of what she was doing before and then after. So she tries on the tight black pants. We put an amazing top on her. We put some little wedges because the heels were a little too much for her, but we did do wedges to make her legs look amazing. She looked in the mirror, and she burst out in tears, and she said, Kim, that mirror is rigged. I said, no, dear, that is you.
Nice.
That is you. And it's always been you. You just haven't seen you like this. And from that moment on, something happened. It just clicked. And she then started wearing all these different clothes that fit her body more. And people were complimenting her left and right. And as that happened, her confidence grew in her body. So that's kind of the magic of the internal and the external.
Yes. It reminds me of, I had a relative who's trying to open up her own business, and she was going to a trade show in Chicago, and she was telling me how terrified, you know, she was, that she was just this, you know, she identified herself as a housewife, and she wanted to open up kind of like a Sur La Table thing, and she goes, why would anyone take me seriously, and all these things, and I said to her, I said, Carol, you're the only one who knows how despicable you are. I said, no. I said, no one else knows. You're going to the stupid convention center, and these salesmen who are staying at Holiday Inn downtown on Michigan Avenue, they're thrilled. You're young and you're pretty and you have money, and they can't wait to talk to you. And she never thought of that. Like, she never thought of it. She never thought. She just, you know, it's like when people, I tell people when they go for job interviews, and I say, never tell the person how much money you want. Never. And they've done studies on this, because I'm looking for a job with you, Kim, and I'm saying to myself, boy, I'll be thrilled to get $80,000. And you're thinking, I'll be thrilled to get Gary for $120,000. People almost always undersell themselves. When they go for an interview, they almost always lowball themselves. So you never tell them how you say, I'm confident you'll make an offer, you know, based on my skills and abilities. Because we are so acutely aware of our flaws, and we're so like dismissive of our things that are great about us.
It's so true. You know, it's funny. I'm chuckling because I feel like you and I have such similar philosophies. It's weird, and we have. I mean, we know each other, but not as well. And I love everything that you're saying. I totally believe, and I even teach myself and to other people, but in different ways. The syndrome. I kind of renamed that syndrome, and I call it the zit syndrome. And this is what I've found. Like, you know, when you have a zit. And you look in the mirror and you think it is the worst ever. And you think it's like, oh, my God, everybody notices it. It's disgusting. It is like a volcano exploding. People are going to stare at it. Right? But the reality is nobody even notices. I mean, maybe it looks a little different. Right?
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I see this showing up in my practice over and over again where people think and – that they're like breaking news if they're going to, you know, do something. Oh, my God, everyone's looking at me, and I'm not good enough, and I am the zit. And, like, honey, you know, no offense, but it's not breaking news that you're just saying hello to someone or smiling.
That's,
you know,
right.
It really is about, like, how we see ourselves, the zit. So
that's right.
Because it's always bigger
it's
to us
than it is. Yes. It's the AA saying, which I'm sure you know, that I'm a piece of shit at the center of the universe. Like, you know, like I'd say, you know, my patients say, Dr. Penn, I'm invisible and worthless, and I'm on fire, and a woman wouldn't throw a bucket of water on me. But when I walk into this party, everyone stops and looks at me and says, boy, am I an ugly piece of shit. It's like, really? I'm like, how is that possible? Wait a minute.
Right.
I thought you were the invisible man.
Yeah. Well, and especially women, and I will just kind of say a disclaimer and just how women get socialized. I mean, I think that it's really hard for women to embrace what we have and what we like about ourselves. And we're kind of socialized to downplay it, in fact. It's more, you know, acceptable to say things we don't like and kind of downplay us and actually compliment other people. And then on top of it, in some of the family systems that we've grown up in, that was your ascribed role. And so then we have this kind of difficulty, because when a woman shows up and says, I love my legs, other women will be like, oh, my God, what a bitch, you know, how conceited. But, you know, it's not that. It's about just owning what you have, not in a conceited way, but just really embracing the gifts that you have. And that just really shows up in your confidence, the way you move, the way you talk. And so, you know, when I give seminars, a lot of times I'll ask people, you know, ladies, you know, what do you love about yourself? Name a body part. And a lot of women will be like, well, people say that I'm like, not what people say. What do you look in the mirror and say,
yes.
I like? So it
yes.
is. I think it gets hard for women.
That's, yes. And conversely, if you said to them, what don't you like, hands would go up like one by one. Well, I don't like this.
Oh, yeah, I mean, right.
And I don't like this,
exactly.
And my eyes are too wide or too close together, my boobs are too big or too small.
Yep.
Whatever it is, we, like what I said about, you know, we lowball ourselves on anything. It's like, and we're afraid, you know, it's so interesting. We're afraid if I said to you, I really like this about myself, that we're afraid. It's so interesting how we let fear just keep us, they're like idiot bumps of life, and we just can't get out of this lane that we're in. Because I'm afraid, Kim, if I say I like this about me, that mm-hmm. you're going to think I think I'm the greatest guy in the world, and that you know, women are like lucky to have me, like look like I'm some braggadocio guy who is just an obnoxious bore, when really I'm just saying I like this about me.
Right.
But I'm afraid,
right.
I'm afraid of how you're going to hear that. So when you outsource it to other people, it stifles us and makes us quiet and introverted.
It's true. But see, and this is why I go back to the clothes thing. And it's sometimes it's not even what you say, but how you wear it, right? So like when I'm shopping with a guy or a girl, you know, I always am trying to figure out what they do like about their bodies. And so let's say a woman they do like their breasts. And so what clothes can we get that showcase her that area in a very flattering, tasteful way? And then if there's an area that she doesn't like about her body, then let's get clothes that conceal that area so that when you show up on a date or an interview or, you know, whatever, where you need to have that confidence, you're going to, like, feel really good knowing that that body part is being showcased well and that the ones you don't. So you're not distracted by it. Because really, we can all get distracted by the stuff that we don't like. It's really powerful.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned before about online dating. Like, I wonder, like, if that, how often don't we have to go through a lot before we actually go to a place to, like, meet somebody, like a restaurant or a bar or something? Like, how many people now are going online, and what is your take on internet dating?
Yeah, it's a great topic, and again, I could talk for hours about it because it's so people are struggling where to meet people, and especially here in LA, I think is more difficult because we're not a walking city, so we have to make opportunities for ourselves to get to places to meet people, which actually a lot of studies have shown that is a factor. But my whole take is this, is that a dating plan, and this is what I help people do, you know, with every, you know, meeting people is a huge part of what I do. It's much like a financial portfolio. I call it a dating portfolio. Like, you have to diversify your portfolio in order to get better results, right? So it's
smart.
Like, you can't just do online dating and expect it to be a great experience if that's all you're doing, because then you're going to show up on the date and your mojo and your socialization and your social muscle is going to be a little atrophied because you're just sitting there kind of online. I feel like it all works together. Like, I tell people, you know, go out and meet people at coffee shops, at the grocery store, push yourself. Do like 5 interactions a week where you're just having some meaningful conversations and connections with people, and then turn it up a notch and try to flirt with some people. Find events that you are interested in. It could be networking events for your business. It could be events around your hobbies and your passion, because you're most likely going to meet like-minded people. Do online dating. Try it. Great. Do Tinder. Awesome. Like, to me, there's no limits, but you have to diversify, because the people who I find who get like burnt out from online dating, that's all they're doing. And then they see the same people over and over again, and they get frustrated, and they're like, ugh, there's no good men, or ugh, these ladies suck. You know, so it's you really do have to make and create your own opportunities, and that's the name of the game. It's like Facebook come live. Like, get out of the house.
But I want to stay in my underwear and pretend to you that I'm the most amazing person in the world. Mm-hmm. Why can't I just do that?
Well, you can. You totally can. And I would invite you to, if that's working for you, then totally do that. Because you may meet some other woman in her underwear. And that's great. The match made in heaven.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's, you know, people, it's just, what is it, Kim? Because it just seems to me that we're so, it's like, if I feel, like, I tell my patients this, that we have to be in process, and we can't be focused on the results.
Oh, my God,
that,
totally.
I have to play good poker. I have to make the right bet at the right time. If someone gets an inside straight on the last card and wins all the money, I have to say I did the right thing. Like, I can't. So many times if I've been told, let's say by my mother, that no one's going to want me, or my dad told me I'm not good enough or what have you, and I have this kind of canvas upon which my life is painted that I'm not a good enough person, and I come to see Dr. Penn, I come to see, you know, Kim, and we work on all these things, and I go talk to somebody and she shoots me down. Or she says, I'm not interested. Not even shoot me down. She says, Gary, you're a nice enough guy, but I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. It's like everything I feared is confirmed, and I'm one and done. And I just want to go back home and watch CSI, and that's the end of it.
Right, right. Well, that's kind of like the old notion of projection and creating our own realities, right? Like, be careful what you tell yourself because it might be true. Right. And that's where that NLP, you're like, what is NLP? It's neuro-linguistic programming, if anybody has heard of it. And it really is powerful of, you know, how what you tell yourself and how you act is high. There's just a high correlation of that, you know, that. And
sure,
it really is true. And that's why the act of doing something, I mean, sometimes I had a client and another, a male client, he flew in from Denver. And by the way, people fly in and work with me, or I go to their hometown as well, you know, for people, because sometimes they want me to see them in their environment, and sometimes people want to get a taste of that, you know, that the LA
nice.
Sunshine and fun. But he came in and I asked him what his kind of personal icon was, and what was it about him that he liked, and for him it was Harrison Ford. And I said, oh, interesting, so what is it that you like about Harrison Ford? And he named all these qualities. I'm like, that's fascinating. I said, you know, as you're naming all these qualities, those are qualities I'm wondering, do you see in yourself? And he kind of looked at me, and he's like, I guess so. I said, great. So I'm just trying to understand what the difference is between Harrison Ford and you. He's like, I guess really nothing except that he's a celebrity. I'm like, exactly. I said, so why isn't it that you can't walk around today like you're Harrison Ford? Like, let's just pretend that you are Harrison Ford today. He's like, you know what? I love that. And he did. And he was so, like, it was something really shifted, and it's like, kind of act as if and you will become. It really was that powerful for him. And, you know, from the clothes he wore to his approach with women that day, it was everything. And so it's not necessarily fake or phony, but like when we're struggling with our own kind of demons or gremlins, if you will, and usually, like you said, it's messages from the past that are creeping up. They're just, it's not valid. It was something that someone else said to us long ago. But we have to, get rid of that.
It's true. It's true. But the other part is, and I tell people, and my saying for myself, my personal motto is, I try to be a little better today than I was yesterday, and a little better tomorrow than I am today. And I consider myself a work in progress. And I am not a finished product, and I am a flawed man, and as my wife will attest to. But I am a flawed
man.
I am so far from perfect. But you know why I am so happily married is because my wife loves me sometimes for my flaws and sometimes certainly in spite of my flaws. And it's the idea of not that, you know, I mean, I totally understand what you're saying. And I'm saying in addition to that, there's a part of us that, because I've seen Harrison Fords of the world. I see them in my practice. 75% of my practice is are celebrities and people in the industry who are very, very famous. And they're just like the rest of us. They're just like you and they're just like me. And they have their own demons and they're afraid and they, you know, they're no different. And sometimes they're even more, they have more challenges than other people. And it's
exactly.
can we present ourselves to the world as I am flawed. And I'm as good as I am. I'm no better or no worse. I'm as smart as I am and no better or worse. That I am I am a nice guy, but sometimes I'm selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who I am. And can we be loved for that? And can we present ourselves in that way where people say, okay.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
So,
I always say,
yeah.
like, perfection is imperfection.
True.
Right?
Yes.
I'm seeing almost an epidemic of women and men of this notion of being perfect. And I said, yeah, but being perfect is being not perfect.
So
because
it's
there's
so
no
true.
Such thing, really. And that's what makes us human and real and connect with
that's
others.
Right.
And if you have this kind of facade, then it's like you can't really connect with that person. So.
You can't, and you're kind of a phony, and you have anxiety that you're going to find me out, and it's this airbrushed, you know, like when you talk about online dating, how many times have people said, well, this picture's 15 years old, and, you know, you said you were 5'11", and you're really 5'6", or 5'7", and, you know, like, what are people thinking?
Well, you know, I mean, yes,
tell
and,
me.
And I will say it's hard because, you know, look, there's also a science and algorithms. You know, let's take the emotion out of it and the psychology of it. But this is also just technique and strategy because people will search certain heights, certain age, certain looks, and you may get kicked out of the search because you're not in a certain kind of category kind of thing, and you could be a great person, but you want to have – kind of opportunity to meet that person. And
that's,
you know,
what they're
argument.
Thinking. That's a good answer.
Right. Right.
That's a really good answer.
Yeah. And one could argue, well, then that person's not the right person for me. But how do you know that maybe that person also has narrow-minded thing because of their stuff? Like, what I'm saying is that there's no easy answer, and it's not always because we're being superficial or because of that.
So I was being very shallow in my analysis, and you were being a little deeper.
Yeah,
because
it may not be that. It may just be that, you know what, I've tried doing my stated age and my stated height, but nobody's giving me a chance, and I just want a chance. And so it's
I want
sad
a chance
that,
to
like,
convince you, yes.
Yeah, that online dating has that, but that's all you have is that split second to make the first impression. This is, you know, why I do so much work around first impression and just being congruent with who you are.
Well, I want to talk because we're getting not super low on time, but I want to talk about a workshop that we are going to be doing in April 18th. And we are doing a Shift for Love workshop on dating and relationships. It's going to be you. It's going to be me. It's got to be Shannon Colleary. And we are going to have an all-day workshop. And what are you going to be talking about? Obviously, you're going to be talking about what we've been talking about, but in much greater detail. But what is your hope when people come to the workshop? What are you hoping that they leave from your influence on them?
Feeling awesome about themselves.
I mean, just to make
yeah,
that's it.
That's it. Okay, next. No, I'm just kidding. I believe, and I will talk about this at the workshop more, that there's people talk about phases in relationships. I believe that there's phases in dating. And so I want to talk about the different phases of dating and how to help people kind of move through the continuum so that they end up in a successful relationship. And so I'm going to do a lot of talking of first impressions and body language, and I have actually a magic formula for attraction that I will reveal to all the ladies who are there. Yes, and it is a simple formula that can be instituted in your life like right now. So that's pretty cool. And really, what you know, the opposite sex finds attractive. Getting a good dating
boobies,
image.
Boobies. Boobies.
Yeah, but not every guy is a boob guy.
I'm sorry. We're going to edit that out because I had a moment. I'm sorry. I'm a little.
I don't think you should edit out because that is.
I'm a little ashamed of myself.
It
oh
was
my
a
God.
Freudian slip on a psychological radio show. I think it's brilliant. We're going to talk about that. And to your point, every guy likes different things. So we need to embrace what we have, what we like, and we'll attract the person that's right for us. So just a whole slew of things. And then I'm even going to do some makeovers.
Oh, that's good. So you're going
to
take people from the audience and you're going
to
sit there and say, let's do a transformation here.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of assess your dating image and do how to, like, tweak a few things. And seriously, it's so fun. I mean, there's not many things in life where you get, like, instant gratification and instant change. Like, all this good internal work we have to work on for many, many years.
Yes, yes.
I am going to do things that will change things in an instant that will be, like, an aha moment for you. So.
Yeah, you know what? I tell my patients this all the time that the difference between a lowland gorilla and Albert Einstein is 2% DNA. And if we could just,
yeah.
You know, if we could just change things a little bit, it is amazing what can be accomplished.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. So that's going to be wonderful. Shannon Colleary, she's amazing, and she's going to talk about just the intricacies of dating and the stop signs and the go signs and how to understand yourself and how to understand men. And she brings such a wealth of knowledge and insight into that. And me, I'm just going to be the psychologist, and I'm going to try to give us a little archaeological viewpoint and then bring it into the practical here and now. I think it's going to be a terrific workshop, and I think it's going to be transformative for the people that come, because I tell you, Kim, you will always have work, because it is so difficult these days, to feel good yourself, to feel vulnerable, to put yourself out there, and to find the one, find Neo, find the one for you. It's so hard.
Yeah.
It's difficult. But before we go, I want to, you have something to offer the listeners that I think is pretty cool. So I want you to tell us about that.
Yes. So I have a free gift for everybody, and we'll have a link up, I assume, that'll be just easy to click on. But for the women, I have a free body type booklet, which teaches you about, there's 5 body types, by the way, and it teaches you how to measure yourself and know what body type you are, and then it gives a list of clothes that flatter your body and also the ones that you should stay away from. And I just want to state and just clarify, this is not about weight distribution, because every time people hear like measuring, women get freaked out. We're not measuring where you know how big your boobs are, or your weight or anything. It has to do with actually your bone structure and something that you're born with. And it's really interesting. Once you know your body type, it makes shopping so much easier, much more effective,
and
less anxiety provoking. And then for the men, I have my Man's Fashion Manifesto, and it's like a secret guide that every guy wants to know about fashion, because you men do know and want to know. You just don't have a forum to talk about it. It's not like on a Sunday afternoon you're going to sit around and talk about fashion. So it's really cool. And guys, I just have to say, women love a well-dressed guy, and it can increase your dating success by 55%. I mean, that's huge.
Really?
Huge.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Huh. And that's the research. That's not me talking. So really pay attention to the clothes you wear, and I give kind of like, you know, head-to-toe guide for you guys.
Well, once I stopped wearing white socks with my sandals, I had a little more success.
Oh, my God, remember, you did not.
No, I'm kidding. So we're going to put a link on the podcast when people will be able to click in. We're going to get that set up, and they'll be able to access that for these two gifts, which are pretty cool. And for everyone else who wants to be involved in the workshop on April 18th at the Rock Center in Santa Monica, go to the website shiftforlove.com. shiftforlove.com. It's really going to be a terrific day, and I'm expecting great things. I really am. I wouldn't do this unless I thought it was going to be very transformative. And you know, being alone and feeling lonely is lonely. And you said it, Kim. We have to take action. And we have to do something, and we can't just sit there and be at the bus stop and sit just quietly and hope a bus picks us up and takes us. Sometimes we just need to walk to the beach, take care of business, and get things done. So I'm thinking April 18th, that's what's going to happen. But Kim, I'm all happy right now. I was happy when we started this podcast, and I'm still happy.
That's good.
What do you think about
that?
That's a good
thing. I'm happy that you're happy, and so we'll be happy together. And I just want to say that if anyone wants more information about what I do and me, you can go to Elite Image Makeovers with an S.com, and I have lots of goodies on there as well. And I even do a virtual makeover via Skype if anybody wants, like, a one-hour laser session. That's pretty powerful.
EliteImageMakeovers.com. And where else would I see you in the world these days? Anything coming up that we should be aware of? Any kind of television shows and radio shows you're doing?
Well, you know, besides Shift for Love, which I'm super excited about, there is a reality show that's based in San Diego called The Romance that will be coming up. You can go to romance.tv. and kind of keep up with when that's going to air. It's kind of to be determined right now. And I also am part of an amazing show called The Great Love Debate, I think you mentioned in the beginning, mm-hmm. where we travel around the world and we get men and women in the room and we kind of discuss and debate things about dating and love and debunking myths. And there's a panel of experts and the co-hosts, which is me. I kind of work with Brian Howie, who is the host, and he does a fabulous job of the whole production and getting people talking. And then afterwards, there is a mixer, which is super cool. And we're going all over the United States. So next week,
how much fun is that?
Yeah, it's really fun.
Well, cool. Okay, well, we are getting near the end of the show, or where the countdown is happening. Kim, thanks so much for being on my podcast. I'm all happy again. So I'm going to hang up with you. I'm going to wish my listeners farewell till our next podcast. Once again, shiftforlove.com is the thing to link on if you're interested in the workshop. Until next time, this is Dr. Gary Penn. Be well.